slightly too big the picture, but okay. What time is it? Sorry? What time is it?
It's 1:58.
Okay, thank you. Well, shout at me if I don't notice.
Sorry?
Just shout at me if I don't notice. Time's up, right? Okay. Hello, I'm Chris. My real name is Krzysztof, but I'm not bothering you with proper pronunciation of my name. I'm a data architect and a deputy of Data Processing Center in Geneva in the European Space Mission called Gaia. I'm going to tell the story from the perspective of the PostgreSQL user. Initially, this presentation was done for the first day of this conference, for the PostgreSQL Summit. We established some links with Koichi of PostgreSQL, right now also with Mason from PostgreSQL, but I would like to tell you a few words about the mission itself, what kind of approach we have to attack the problem we have with PostgreSQL in the background. So I'm going to say a few words about the mission itself, the science we do in Geneva, which is slightly different than the rest of the consortium, and then I have a few words about data model, hardware, how I see Excel role, or clustered Postgres in our scope, and then collaboration. So a few words about myself. I put the bio, I never do this, but in this context I thought it could be fruitful because for a long time I was zealot of object-oriented databases. So I've heard about Postgres during studies when I was really thinking about the world ruled by object-oriented databases. In fact, I came to CERN after a few years of my professional career to pursue the biggest database, object-oriented database, then ever. And the first thing I've done was migration to relational database Oracle. As far as I know, it's still the biggest relational stuff scientifically run at CERN. At the time, it was over 10 years ago, it was run on 12 or 13 machines. So it was sharding down through something similar to foreign data wrappers. And the thing's still running. Then I joined the Gaia group in Geneva that does variability studies. And I'm going to tell a few things what variability studies are in this context. What is Gaia mission? So Gaia is right now quite important mission for the whole astronomical society because no such a mission is going to be pursued for the next 20, 30 years, maybe even more. Recently, the NASA canceled similar mission. And the main goal is to do the census of the galaxy. That means to see as far as we can, to study the stars, all the objects that we have in our galaxy. And all the objects between the magnitude of 6 and 20th. 20th of magnitude means this is the light emitted by the observed by us, which is 400,000 times fainter than what we see normally. And we want to also forward and track down the asteroids, quasars. We want to see what kind of supernovae could happen during the mission. The mission itself is 5 years old, 5 years long. And this is important, actually. I should say that 20th magnitude means we're going to observe 1 billion stars. Recently, there were some debates. The satellite was launched in December. If not to bump it to 21 magnitude, that would mean 2 billion stars, which is obviously bad news from the data perspective, because you need 2 times more space and maybe processing time. So it's not going to happen. There are some problems, but actually, this is still very, very, very good. And Gaia has a lot of features that are very, very interesting. Just to make you understand what kind of precision we're talking about, if we put Gaia on the Earth and we place more or less one dime on the Moon, Gaia will be able to see it still. Or you could see the hair from 1,000 kilometers, more or less. This is the precision we're talking about. So there's a lot of problems related to the scientific engineering part. And there are some byproducts, like we may expect 10,000 exoplanets being discovered. And what is very important for us in Geneva is that estimated number of variables from the whole stars we're going to see, to observe, is 10-20%. That means 100 to 200 million of stars are going to be variables. And then if we find out that some star is a variable, we're going to devote a significant time to look at it. Gaia instruments. So another special thing about Gaia is we have two mirrors. Normally, when you think about a satellite or any kind of telescope, you usually have one mirror, and you have one CCD. But in this case, we have two mirrors that, through other intermittent mirrors, point to the one big CCD. This is 1 gigapixel camera, so this is the biggest ever made CCD camera, and right now it's in the space. And because of this fact that we have two mirrors, we have to keep the basic angle at constant degree, so we know what we're looking at, because otherwise we couldn't actually map properly or understand what we're looking at. And because of that, the torus is built such that it's super stable in the thermal conditions that are in the space. So there's some animation. Hope it starts. Yep. I'm not sure if it's visible. Is it? Okay. So we see two mirrors on the torus. We normally Gaia would be spinning all the time. I'm going to show you a bit more about this later. It's spinning over 5 years. It's going to spin several times the whole sky. Every 6 months, the whole sky is scanned. The light goes through one mirror, second mirror, and ends up on the CCD. This is important. The fact that it spins is very important because there is a lot of spinning involved here. First, we spin around the sun. Sun is moving. We're spinning around the sun. We're spinning around the Earth. We have actually special orbit. I'm going to show you what kind of orbit it is. It's also different than the usual satellite you've heard about. This is the mirror. Normally, when any serious scientific satellite is built, there are two satellites built. First, you do your stuff. You learn on your mistakes, and you put the thing aside. Start from scratch. But in this case, the creation, especially of the mirrors, is so complicated, so time-consuming, that only one satellite was built. So if something would go wrong during the launch, you would have a problem. Everything went well. For the last 4 months, the satellite is there. It's still in the commissioning phase. But there are still some problems. So for example, scientists didn't envision that some type of ice could be... some residua of ice could gather in the tent of the satellite, which affects the light that we observe. So there's a number of issues still unsolved, but apparently this is not that big problem, and it's not a stopper yet. Another thing, when you think about satellite, it's usually geostationary satellite, which is pretty close to the Earth. In this case, we are in Lagrangian point 2. This is the point where we have two such points, L1 and L2, two points where the gravity forces of Earth and the Sun equalize themselves. So this is the point once you're there, you kind of wobble around. When we're spinning, you can observe the whole sky without being eclipsed by the Earth forever. So there's no danger of your batteries running out because you run out of juice because there was eclipse on your solar panels. this is a very important thing that the satellite spins, but also has precession. So this X is also is changing the angle. And this causes very peculiar way we look at the sky. So imagine that we're spinning, we're changing the precession, this axis is changing, but normally the spin, one turn like this, or like you see, it's more or less 6 hours. And you see, we start with one point of view, then the second point of view, and it rotates, slowly scanning the stripes of the sky. Every 6 months, the whole sky is scanned. What kind of science we can do with this? A lot of science. We in Geneva concentrated on the variability based from photometry. I'm going to explain what is this. But first of all, it's all about creating a catalog of stars in three dimensions. So we know more or less how our galaxy looks like. This is the vision of the artist from the side and then from the top, let's say. You see this is Sun, this is us. And this is the color shows you. This is a heat map showing you how much stars, how many objects you could see through the galaxy. There's an interesting artifact here. So this is actually simulation from the Nordemastrum, the supercomputer from Barcelona. And it turns out that we have the extension here. That means we can see further, deeper into the center of the galaxy. Another thing, how we can do this? How we can see so much deeper? How could we construct the 3D model of the galaxy? This is all about parallax. So just imagine I'm standing here, I'm looking at you, and I'm moving, like the guy is moving, and I see different angle. I see this exactly the thing that's happening here. Some people are moving faster than the others. You're moving much faster than the guys at the end of the room. And this is how, by calculation, by triangulation, we're able to understand what's going on if it comes to distribution of the objects in the galaxy. So this is one thing. The other thing is, I think everybody recognizes this. What is that, right? If you live on the northern hemisphere, it's Ursa Majus. The idea is why we want to understand with a 3D map of the galaxy, because it's cool. It gives you a lot of information about what we are, what the galaxy formation rules are there, and what's the future of the space, and so on. So we can do a lot of science. Some of the science is stellar astrophysics, galactic structure, it was shown like before, reference frame. Maybe I should also show this one Okay. But you could see at the end of the animation that some stuff is moving in some different directions. So we don't know actually exactly how the matter in our galaxy is moving, what directions are affected. By checking both the 3D map and the speed or the gradient of the movement of specific objects or parts of the galaxy, we can understand how the whole thing is working, which could help us also with understanding of fundamental physics. And there's dark matter question. It also should help us to understand how the dark matter affects and what it is, the galaxy and the space. How Gaia works. First of all, we see the light that we see is observed light. We have to remember that what we see is not necessarily what happened because of all this motion that we involved in. So first we observe the emitted light, then we digitalize it, and then we send a stream which is compressed to the Earth of the information. So CCD is really responsible for digitizing this information like that. And then there's a pretty powerful video processing unit on board that does the rest. But a lot of stuff is happening on the Earth. And us in Geneva, we are at the end of the food chain, in fact. This is example. This is actually the CCD. As you see, CCD is composed of multiple other small CCDs. We have star mappers to each four different mirror one, mirror two star mapper. Then we have the real thing that observes. So and then we have the spectrometers. So you have different. Sorry, we have filters for CCDs with different visual bands because this is visible light, this is blue, this is red, and then we have radio velocities. So radio velocities also give you. This is this thing that gives you the idea about how things are moving away or closer to us. And imagine that we expect some window here. So, okay, so star is coming. It's entering the field of view. Star mapper detects it. And basically, then there's the whole logic in the video processing unit that tracks the star once it was detected by the star mapper. It takes more or less 40 seconds, 4 seconds per one column. The whole thing takes 40 seconds to scan. So it's doing boring thing all the time, the same thing. The exciting thing about it is that it has to be super precise. So for example, also there was a problem recently that satellite is fainter than expected, 10 times fainter. And in order to calibrate the data that comes from the satellite, we need millimeter precision. We have to know up to millimeter in the space, even if it's 1.5 million kilometers from us, what's the position. So there was upgrade for the telescopes that I used to track it. Okay, so it's 45 seconds. And us as scientists, this is what we see. This is also after some chain of processing. This is, we call it calibration. And actually, this is not what we get. This is what we start processing with. But in order to get it, there are a few additional steps, which is called the reconstruction of the time series, because we are the only ones in the consortium that are interested in the things that are time series, so time-oriented. So this is, for the astronomer, normal astronomer, if they see this, they probably know what kind of object is that. The human eye is so good that, if it's trained, and the human brain is so good that by looking at these things, you could probably say what is that. But you would have to spend a lot of time. So what's usually happening is that you fold it. I fold it over the period that you find. So from our perspective, the major work, scientific work, is to find if the object is constant or it's variable, and if it's variable, if it's periodic or not. And then if it's periodic or not, then you can start your real science with this classification. But the finding period, so you can see period of 4 days here, these are days in phase, so this is a period of 1.5 and so on. So this is the in phase, so it means that 1 means 4 days, right? Here would be 7 days. Here would be 5 days. Here would be 8 days, 1, and so on. But we see this is repetitive thing. So this is special type of objects, which is called cephades. They are very nice because they are sinusoid-like. They have sinusoid-like property. And yes, finding out this period is time-consuming. It takes more or less 2-3 seconds per object. So you can calculate easily. You have three, four time series per object. We have to do period search on all of them. It gives quite some time, so it's days of processing at least. So our ultimate goal is comparable with the previous mission that Gaia is based on. It was called Hipparchos. And Tycho was the Earth kind of follow-up of Hipparchos. And every astronomer that works with photometric data has the full catalog on his shelf. It's a number of books. It's probably around 20 books. That consists of the whole catalog. In this catalog, you have this light curves I showed you before and some attributes that are calculated derived from the both light curves, parallax, metallicity from colors, and so on. And what we have for Gaia, what we plan for Gaia, is to have similar catalog. Around, probably it's a bit later now, it's 2022. So at the end of the mission, actually this mission ended in 93, and the catalog was published in 97. So Gaia finishes around 2021-22. I hope we can get it on time. So the idea is to, once the final data is sent, processed, and categorized, we want to publish the catalog. But it would take much bigger shelf, right? So hard. Remember I showed you how the Gaia spins and moves? So this is the data, first kind of data look, or big data look, and on what's happening. Here we have the number of observations, so how long your time series is, depending on what point on the sphere you look. And you can see there are certain parts of them from the beginning, from day zero, are more dense with the data. The time series are longer than elsewhere. So we have a non-uniform look on the sky. That means that the science we do with the time series is not comparable with what we've seen before if it comes to processing. We don't have equally sampled time series. We have to really model, we have to do a lot of stuff to model properly the time series. And there's a lot of factors that affect how you see or how you model your time series. So there's a lot of research done for that. And you see after 5 years, so this is nominal time of the mission, if the, we have enough fuel, and fuel is used to correct the orbit, make slight corrections. There are some, another interesting sign is that we have micro thrusters. One thruster power force given is comparable to the one of the bee, just to make it super precise. So again, maybe I go back. We see that on average we have 80 observations per source, but it varies from 40, or actually 30 to 250. And the global data flow. So we have telemetry. So this is the guys that gathered data from the satellite, and there is a lot of science before and until we get there. The data is distributed in custom format, which is pretty dumb. This is the Java serialized objects in fact, and that are compressed. And this is really hard to read from the data perspective. This is horrible because you spend most of the time unzipping. There's no really any ordering. So as I said, we are special because we want time series. But for most of these guys, they don't care about the time ordering. They see the transit and the source, and they're able to derive the science from that. Basically, they calculate scalars. But we have to reconstruct the time series in order to operate on that. From the Postgres perspective, this is interesting because we started from more or less zero 4 years ago. 5 years ago, and right now everything runs on Postgres with a lot of extensions, a lot of things around it, so I'm going to speak about this later. But also other units could be interested, especially in the Postgres XC, because they have slightly similar problems. Especially CU9 could be interesting for Postgres because this is the catalog, this is the shelf, I showed you before, that's going to stay there for years and years. So if this thing runs on Postgres, I think this is good for Postgres as well because it's going to be there for many years to come. The group is distributed all over Europe. I work here, but we have a lot of active, well, we don't have that many active people, but we have a number of affiliates. And really, the people who are dealing with data or creating software is order of 3-5. The rest are scientists. We have to distribute the data to many of these people who are outside of Geneva, so they. This is not necessarily Gaia data. We use a lot of data that is existing. Then there's a number of surveys that we base our research and development on. So people who did observations, both Hipparchos, I showed you before, but there's 10 of others. Two or three of them are very, very valuable because the classification they do is really good. And this is what is classification. So this is like Linus taxonomy tree. You see that this is our own invention. We basically looking for species. We depending on the attributes, the way they behave, we want them to be classified. So we're starting from this, and we have number of rules, and we're doing all these typical, maybe not typical, but analytical steps to find out what the things are. And some of them, most of them, will be covered by Gaia. So we hope that. Even with this strange sampling I showed you of the sky, we can still find most of these types through the processing, through the classification effort we have. So yes, this number of gains that we get from this when we have this classes defined. But in the end, what we're doing is we're taking the true classes. So I mentioned the existing surveys. I also should mention that for the good astronomer, classification till recently was seeing these folded light curves and saying, oh, this must be that. They were looking at this, thinking, good astronomer could do this, could probably classify 300 objects per day. We have, let's say, 200 million if we do the first filtering, so it's not going to cut. So what we're doing, for example, building classifiers based on the true class, which is the thing we got from astronomers. And then we build our classifiers, we predict, then we do. This is the cross-validation effort. So you see, this is what we classified the classes, so eclipsing binaries and so on, cephades. And this is true classes. Of course, not always true class is really true, so you have to be careful. But the idea is that this diagonal is, you should have only stuff on this diagonal. This would be ideal situation from the scientific point of view. But it's not the case, and it takes a lot of iterations to understand why. Okay, so what's the processing model? I've showed you we have this central repository that we get the data from. And this repository, once the data is given, we have to inject the data. Then we have to do time series reconstruction, which is unique for us, and this is quite an effort from the data perspective. Then we have to do validation. We could use similar techniques I showed you before, like the confusion matrix, stuff like that, on the subset, when we run our processing on a subset of the data. And then we do the proper processing. This is green because it could be repeated multiple times. So during the 6 months, we can do this many, many times because we find out that our parameters are wrong or we want to improve the algorithms, all this kind of typical things that you do when you do when you're dealing with unknown, because we all the time dealing with unknown. And we also, I didn't mention, but we also want to create, to discover new classes, of course, of objects and add them to this taxonomy tree if we find them. And I know this is not readable, it's just about the color. So this is one, let's say one cycle, 1 month processing. The green thing means this is the input data, but the red thing means this is, the violet thing means that there's some human intervention or validation needed. So you see, even through one, during the 1 month, we have to do a lot of manual work. Manual means that we checking statistically, or we checking the metrics, if the metrics look like we want. And again, this is where Postgres is important for us because we do analytics using Postgres. So why we are big data? I like the taxonomy invented by Michael Stonebreaker, which defines big data as big volume, big velocity, and big variety. But you don't have to cover all of these 3 points. It's enough probably when you cover one well enough. But if you cover two, then means you probably big data. So why big velocity? We have these input files, which are called JBINs. We have more or less 3,000 of them. To get just photometry, we have also auxiliary data, but for photometry, we have more or less 3,000 files that are order of 10 megabytes big or small gigabytes big, few gigabytes each. As I said, this is CPU bound, so we have to distribute it. A lot of processing. In the end, solution, we load the stuff into intermediate partitions, probably distribute it if we use Postgres XE table. And we run aggregation in SQL on this. This is the just example, very well simplified, but not that much, of how we reconstruct the time series. So this is important for us. This is really, this is the really long table, which has 10 to 11 times 4, tuples. We join it with the source just for the cross-check, and we do some stuff. It's more or less how it looks like. So of course, we have to partition that because otherwise we partition this and we want to distribute it or parallelize it with our in-house system if the Postgres XE or Excel doesn't work for us. And after such a query, we have more or less, in the input, we have the big table, which is 10 to 11 observations. We ended up with 10 to 9 sources with ordered time series. Right, so this is reconstruction. We have more or less 2-3 days to do this. Variety, why we... We are not that, we are not say SAP type of place, but we have 70 domain classes that are persisted. Not all of them, happily not all of them are mapped to tables. We're using OpenJPA for the mapping. So it's possible to doing some tricks to fold it to more or less 20, 30 tables. But few of them are, or some of them are could be replicated, so they are not that big, but many of them have to be partitioned. We also have, if it comes to variety, we have data from other surveys, so we're using entity attribute kind of data model as well for that, HStore and so on. Volume, so as I mentioned, we have this input, but we also have this repeating processing during this 1 month window or 6 month window when we generate the data, because we generate output all the time. So from this tens of terabytes on the input, we can generate easily hundreds of terabytes during one cycle, and we have at least 10 cycles to go. So normally what we do, we keep the data from the cycle minus one, from the previous cycle during the current cycle,